Welcome to NRS Performance Measures under WIOA. My name is Ben McDaniel. I am with Illinois Community College Board of Adult Education, and this webinar is to review the changes that we're going to see under the new WIOA law and the NRS data that we share with the federal government. The title of this webinar is A Shift in Focus to Employment, Wages, Credentials, and Educational Skills Development. Let's jump right in. So for what's new and what's not, we have a new term, reportable individual. Now, an individual who has taken any action to demonstrate an intent to use program services and who meets reporting criteria, including providing identifying information, but has fewer than 12 contact hours. This is different from our traditional reportable NRS individual who has earned 12 or more contact hours, and that individual is now known as a participant. Another new term we have is periods of participation. The period of participation occurs each time a participant enters the program and gets at least 12 hours of service, even if the service occurs after an exit during the same program year. A participant may, in fact, have multiple periods of participation, and performance is measured and reported on NRS tables for each period. We will continue to report non-duplicative counting of all participants in our NRS tables. Another new term we have under the WIOA performance measures is measurable skill gain. These are the educational functioning skill level gains that we know from the past, and they're measured through pre and post testing, program exit into post-secondary education, and the awarding of Carnegie units. Also included is the receipt of a secondary credential, and only the last measurable skill gain is reported on NRS tables, as for previous NRS reporting. And as we said, pre and post testing and assessment procedures and policies will remain the same as we move forward. Another new term that we find under WIOA is barriers to employment. WIOA defines 11 types of participant characteristics that create barriers to employment, and the Joint ICR Information Collection Request Form breaks out performance measures for each type of participant by the barrier. We'll go into the barriers of employment a little further on in the program. Another new term that we have, a familiar term I should say that we have, is program entry. It's the date of enrollment into the program. A slight nuanced change in terms of program exit is now that we call the program exit the last day of service, but it cannot be determined until at least 90 days have elapsed since the participant last received services. So in other words, program exit is the last date of services with no services provided for 90 days and no scheduled future services. Credential attainment is the last of the new terms we're going to review today. And that's the receipt of a secondary credential is only counted if the participant is also employed or is enrolled in an education or training program leading to a recognized post-secondary credential within 1 year after exit from the program. Once again, this measure only applies to participants who test into or pre-test or post-test at the ninth grade equivalent or higher. What are the differences between participants and reportable individuals? A reportable individual has shown interest in or has begun attending an adult education program. A participant has received 12 or more contact attendance hours in the program. When is an individual exited from a program? After 90 days with no program activity and no plans for further instruction. In addition to the new terms, we have a listing of 11 barriers to employment that have been defined by WIOA. These are displaced homemakers, those English language learners, new individuals, those individuals exhausting TANF within 2 years. We have ex-offenders, homeless and runaway youth, long-term unemployed, low-income individuals, migrants and seasonal farm workers, individuals with disabilities, single parents, and youth in foster care or those aged out of the system. ICCB will be providing further definitions and clarifications, as well as templates for these barriers to employment on intake forms. So what are the new performance measures we'll be reporting on to the National Reporting System? Employment measures, credential attainment, and measurable skill gains are the three broad topics that we'll be reporting on for program performance. The first of these employment measures, we will report on the percentage of participants employed during the second quarter after program exit. For example, an individual who exits a program in March, we will look 6 months or two quarters after that program exit date and determine if there are any unemployment insurance wage data reported to IDES, the Department of Employment Securities, and any individuals who do are part of the success group. Point number two, the percentage of program participants employed during the fourth quarter after program exit. It runs parallel to the first item that we discussed, and an individual, instead of in the second quarter, it will be in the fourth quarter. So using the same instance, someone who exited during March of a program year would have their follow-up occur in the next year's March for any unemployment insurance wage data reported to IDES to be in the success group. The third item on the employment measures is the median earnings for all participants who are in unsubsidized employment the second quarter after exit. Once again, these are only individuals who have successfully reached the employment in the second quarter after program exit. We will not be data matching for those who have not obtained employment. As I said earlier, employment indicators now measure employment rates for all exited participants. Participants must be tracked after exit. This will be done by ICCB in conjunction with the Illinois Department of Employment Security and wage data information on unemployment insurance. As we've noted, this employment measures have changed from the first and third quarter under WEA to the second and fourth quarter follow-up under WEOA. And as was noted, median earnings are now included as a follow-up measure for all exited participants. The measures, in fact, do not apply to all participants. They apply to all participants except those who are receiving services under the Correction Education and Education of Other Institutionalized Individuals provisions in Section 225 of WEOA, and specifically those who remain incarcerated at program exit. These participants are also excluded from the credential measure. And as I said earlier, the median earnings measure applies only to participants who are employed in the second quarter after exit. We will not be factoring zeros into the median earnings measure. The secondary credential portion of the credential attainment measure applies only to participants who enter at or advance to the ninth grade equivalent level and do not already have a secondary credential. This means anyone who pretests or post-tests at a 9.0 level for above is eligible for data match for the secondary credential portion of the attainment measure. The post-secondary attainment portion of the credential measure is applicable only to participants who are co-enrolled in adult and post-secondary education, including integrated education and training programs. Speaking of credential attainment, the first measure is the receipt of a secondary school diploma or recognized equivalent, high school equivalency, during participation or within 1 year after exit from the program. This is only counted if the participant also enters post-secondary education or training or employment within 1 year after exit. I'll say that again because they're in bold. The receipt of the high school equivalency is only counted if the participant also enters post-secondary education or training or employment within 1 year after exit, and it does in fact qualify if the individual is employed prior to and post-exit at the same job. That individual will receive credit for obtaining their high school equivalency. The second point on credential attainment is in reference to the receipt of recognized post-secondary credential during participation or within 1 year after exit from the program. It has been devised by the Department of Education that developmental education enrollments do count toward the post-secondary education measure. The guidance from Department of Ed is that developmental education enrollments will in fact count toward the post-secondary education measure. So what type of credentials count? A recognized post-secondary credential is defined as a credential consisting of an industry-recognized certificate or certification, a certificate of completion of an apprenticeship, a license recognized by the state or federal government, or an associate or baccalaureate degree. Specifically, such certificates must recognize technology or industry occupational skills for the specific industry and occupation, rather than general skills related to safety, hygiene, etc., even if such general skills are broadly required to qualify for entry-level employment or advancement. Let me repeat that. The certificates must recognize technology or industry and occupational skills for the specific industry and occupation, rather than general skills related to safety, hygiene, etc. In fact, what type of credentials do not count? Those that do not document the measurable technical or industry occupational skills necessary to gain employment or advancement within an occupation. Specific examples of these include the OSHA 10 or 30-hour safety courses, work readiness certificates, completion of workplace orientation or mobility training, or Workforce Development Board work readiness certificates. Those credentials that count must specifically relate to an industry or occupational skill. Those that are broadly related to safety and readiness are not applicable. The next item we're looking at is measurable skill gains. Measurable skill gains we're familiar with from educational functioning levels under WEA, and we're demonstrating measurable skill gains in the same way that we have in the past, comparing the participant's pretest with the participant's post-test using an NRS-approved assessment tool. That's going to be the primary way that our programs and our state recognizes measurable skill gains under WEOA. And additional methods exist, including awarding of Carnegie units or credits in an adult high school program, as well as enrollment in post-secondary education and training. As I stated again, developmental education enrollments will count toward the MSG measure. The second way that we could show an MSG would be the obtaining of a secondary credential or its recognized equivalent, the high school equivalency. How are measurable skill gains reported? SCATES can count only one type of gain under the measurable skill gain measure for a participant for each period of participation for reporting purposes. In other words, an individual can show a measurable skill gain in comparing a pretest with a post-test and obtaining a secondary school or recognized equivalent, but not both during one period of participation. The Office of Career Technical Adult Ed, OCTE, sets single performance targets based on the percentage of participants who achieve measurable skill gains. Our current FY17 level is 41%. The next topic we're going to discuss and look further into are periods of participation. What are POPs? A period of participation begins when an individual enrolls in an adult education and obtains at least 12 hours of service. When a participant exits the program, the period of participation ends, but if there is a new enrollment during the program year, a new period of participation will begin. Therefore, a participant may have more than one period of participation in a single program year. Periods of participation and separation from service. Exit date is the last day of service which is determined after 90 days have elapsed since the participant last received services, and there are no plans to provide the participant with future services. These do not include self-service, information-only services, activities, or follow-up services. We're talking only when an individual enrolls in coursework and begins amassing clock hours, attendance hours. For example, a student who enters in September, exits in December, and re-enrolls in May would have two periods of participation, whereas an individual who enters only once would have one period of participation. Each period of participation is counted separately, and measurable skill gains and exit-based indicators are counted for each period. So let's look at a couple of the new terms in practice again. Periods of participation. How many periods of participation and gains would be registered for a student that enters a program in August and leaves September 1st after receiving 20 hours of instruction with no level gains, then returns in April receiving 50 hours of instruction and recording a level gain prior to leaving the program June 15? That student would have two periods of participation, one for the 20 hours in August to September, and one for the 50 hours in April through June, once again parenthetically separated by 90 days, and one measurable skill gain during the April to June period. So in other words, on the performance report, this individual would have one enrollment, two periods of participation, and one measurable skill gain. So when do these new NRS requirements take effect? The new reporting requirements go into effect, in fact, July 1, 2016. They're already in effect. For FY17, all DAISY data must be therefore certified and frozen by July 31, 2017, so we can produce the first annual report under WIOA to the federal government with the new measures in October of 2017. The good news is that periods of participation are calculated automatically in DAISY. No additional data entry work will be required to track separate periods of participation at the program level. In addition, measurable skill gains are the only benchmark measure we're reporting on for the first 2 years of WIOA. Data from the employment and certification measures will provide baselines from which adjusted levels of performance can be established in the future. A little more good news. Employment-related measures will be tracked through UI wage data and will be matched through IDES by ICCB. No additional responsibility will fall to program staff. In addition to that, as I said earlier, data from the employment and certification measures will provide baselines from which adjusted levels of performance can be established, and accordingly, no sanctions or expected levels of performance will be established for these employment measures in the next 2 fiscal years. In addition to ICCB staff, we also have online resources available. At the OCTE website, they have the WIOA webpage with the reauthorization information, the RSA, the Rehabilitative Services Administration's WIOA webpage, the DOL, Department of Labor, Employment and Training Administration's WIOA webpage, and then additionally on the fourth item there is Performance Accountability Guidance for WIOA's Title 1, 2, 3, and 4 core programs. And as I said, if you have any additional questions, please always feel free to contact your regional support representative, Ben Greer, for Regions 1 and 2, or Ms. Samantha Brill for Regions 3 and 4, or myself, Ben McDaniel, for any problems related to data and compliance issues, as well as WIOA and NRS items. Thank you so very much for your time today. We hope you enjoyed this webinar, and stay tuned for future webinars